Welcome, Juliet.
Thanks so much.
These documents that were released included thousands of pages of emails from the Interior Department. Was there anything else, you know, other than emails in that batch?
Well, I have to admit that while I've read hundreds and hundreds of pages, I haven't read every single page. So I would say the vast majority, almost all of it, were emails, correspondence among different Interior Department officials. There were things such as, for example, a letter that's attached, things like that. And there was also a reference to, for example, a video of Navajo speakers submitting their comments, but that's not something that I was able to, for example, listen to myself.
Just a day after the release, the documents were retracted by the Interior's FOIA office. Your report says that it was sent out to journalists and advocacy groups. Do you have an idea of how many accessed them before the retraction?
That's a really good question. I'm just not sure how many people were able to download them before they were essentially reposted with the retractions, redactions in them. So, you know, I would guess that maybe a small handful of the people who were originally emailed were able to download them.
The conversation is said to have dismissed the benefits of preserving national monuments as is, including artifact preservation and the boosts to tourism and recreation economies, instead focusing on items like logging and energy development potential. Where does the Bureau of Land Management's influence play into this? I saw that they had some of their reports included in this exchange, correct?
Yes, and that's a great question. I mean, there's no doubt that the Bureau of Land Management officials, including those, you know, for example, on the ground in the Southwest as well as in headquarters, were asked to weigh in and provide information and context for these decisions. And they certainly did, and I imagine that they weighed in on a number of fronts, but certainly part of what attracted my attention was when they were providing information and context primarily about Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears, since I was focused on those two monuments, given that their designations have been altered by President Trump. And they certainly highlighted aspects of the designations that were not reflected in the final recommendations that Interior Secretary Zinke made to President Trump.
Were there any monuments in particular that are, I guess you could say, of a special targeting by the Interior Department?
Well, beyond Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears, I would say Cascade Siskiyou in Oregon certainly comes up, as well as the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts, which is a marine monument off New England. Those were certainly the ones that I paid the most attention to as I was reading through those documents, because there was a considerable back and forth about those sites. Although certainly others were mentioned, again, ones that are pretty far afield, Rose Atoll in the Pacific, quite far away from the United States, came up because there was an entire debate about whether, even if they changed the limits on fishing that had been imposed by two previous administrations, you know, would they actually translate into greater fishing, for example?
When it comes to the Department of the Interior, is transparency expected during decision processes around land management? Or, you know, how do you think this accidental release might change that for the future?
That's a tough question to answer. I would say that certainly different administrations have altering approaches to transparency, and it's not, for example, it doesn't neatly fall into Republican administrations act one way, Democratic ones act the other way. You know, you can find, presidents and appointees of both parties that are reluctant to be transparent about how they make decisions. And there's also no question that the law does give administration officials in the executive branch flexibility to keep some deliberations from coming to public light, under the idea that you don't want to hamper federal officials' abilities to communicate frankly before they make a decision if they're worried about what will come to light. I think one thing that has been very interesting under the current administration is that there has been a really aggressive use of the Freedom of Information Act by both journalists and advocacy groups to try to unearth details about certain processes and deliberations that have been behind closed doors. And because all of this has come to light in recent months, this has certainly been the case for, whether you're talking about the Interior Department, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, that there's no question that over time you might have, for example, officials less willing to communicate via email in order to, protect some of what they're talking about from coming to public light.
And one last thing before we wrap up, the Interior's FOIA office in their retraction asked anyone who downloaded the documents to delete them. Does the Post have any intention to publish the documents?
Not at this time. We did put online a few passages that we thought were relevant, and we thought that it made sense. We also did deal with, for example, if there was personal information we thought that should be redacted, that's something that we did voluntarily, noticing that that was indicated. But in terms of a wholesale posting of all these documents online, at this point, that's not something that the Washington Post is planning to do.
Julia Alperin is the Senior National Affairs Correspondent for The Washington Post. Her article on the Department of the Interior's dismissal of evidence supporting national monument protection can be found under the Health and Science section. Julia, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.